It seems like only yesterday that the first 3D printers began amazing us by spewing out plastic doodads. But according to a new exhibit at the Museum of Arts and Design on Columbus Circle, that technology has come a long way since it was first introduced. Out of Hand, Materializing the Post-Digital, looks at the latest trends in digital fabrication and the impact this new technology has had on the fields of art, architecture, and design. I'm very pleased to welcome the show's curator, Ronald T. Lobacco, along with two of the artists in the show, Richard DuPont and Barry X. Ball, to our show today. Hello.
Hello, Leonard.
Hello.
Ron, the wall text that greets visitors to the show begins, "The digital revolution that spawned the computer age is over." Has digital technology now reached into every aspect of our lives?
Absolutely. You know, the premise of the exhibition is that digital technology is so much a part of our lives that it is the invisible data that connects us all together.
Well, what does the subtitle, Materializing the Post-Digital, mean?
Well, the term post-digital is used in the sense that it's after, it illustrates a shift in creative thinking in which creative artists, architects, designers, others are utilizing these technologies as part of their practice.
So this new technology includes both design and fabrication methods?
Yes, absolutely.
We've all seen pieces made using 3D printing. Does this show involve other digital fabrication methods?
Yes, it does. So in addition to 3D printing, the exhibition includes computer-assisted machining and digital weaving and knitting.
Barry, one of your pieces in the show is made of stone, golden honeycomb calcite. Can that be 3D printed?
No. It can be 3D.
I was worried.
It can be 3D carved.
So the 3D actually carves the stone?
It does a large part of it. At the very end of that process, good old handwork comes into play. And there's about 1,500 hours of that.
From what I understand, in most of these pieces, some handwork was necessary as well. But the piece that I was referring to, Envy, is your more perfect version of a 17th century sculpture, La Invidia, by Giusto Lecourt. Now, historically, artists have learned their craft from copying the masters, but you're doing something a little different here.
Yes, I started with a 3D digital scan of the historical antecedent in Carrozzonico in Venice.
So you went to Venice and you did this?
Yes. I took a state-of-the-art Breitman white light scanner and got permission from my friends at the museums in Venice and started with objective data. In the past, when artists copied works, you see them in the Metropolitan, the Louvre, there's subjectivity. I feel that digital scanning provides data without interpretation.
But you have called what you've done a perfecting of the original. Doesn't that mean that you're doing something to it?
Yeah. We start with the objective data. I start with Giusto Lecourt's endpoint as my beginning point, and we modify every aspect of that sculpture.
Richard, one of your pieces is a human figure that looks deformed from front and back, but fairly normal from the side. How did you get that effect?
Well, I began by scanning my body.
But you look perfectly normal. There's no deformation that I can spot.
At least not in the exterior. Yeah, so I had an idea.
We haven't done a brain scan yet.
I actually did do it when I was invited up to MIT at one point to do a brain scan, and luckily things were all clear in that department. So, but the process of scanning the body is not an interior scan; it's an exterior scan. So essentially, it's a topographical map or a 3D photograph, if you will, of the surface of the body. At the time, it was hard to get that done. I founded a video game company out on Long Island that was producing the game Doom at that time. And they had a scanner you could rent for half an hour for a small fee. And I went out there and I scanned my head. And then the rest of the body was done by making a life cast of the body. And those are the two processes that I used for some very earlier pieces. And then finally, I was able to make a full body scan.
Didn't you once volunteer to be a research subject for the military?
Exactly. So to do that full body scan, I did some research online, and there weren't too many places I could get that done. I decided to go to Dayton, Ohio, to the to the Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, where General Dynamics will do that to you if you want them to. I had to agree to take part in an anthropometry experiment that included 10,000 other military personnel. And they use all that data to create very accurate averages that they can use to design anything for military personnel that interfaces with the body. So, you know, flak jackets, helmets, ejection seats, that kind of thing.
But they didn't make it into the show. The military keeps that stuff.
No, I had some problem on the base because they wouldn't let me take off my clothes. So I had to come back to the studio and then make elaborate plaster casts of the rest of my body and then scan those in independently to get that final 3D model of myself.
Barry, you also have a standing figure in the show based on a very famous futurist sculpture, Umberto Boccioni's Unique Forms of Continuity in Space. I know it from the Museum of Modern Art's version. You call your piece Perfect Forms. Why did you feel a need to make a more perfect version of the Boccioni figure?
Well, Boccioni never realized his work in a permanent material. He left us a rough plaster shortly thereafter, went off to World War I, was killed. Boccioni would be considered one of the greatest sculptors of the 20th century if his work had survived. Only three pieces, The Bottle, Unique Forms of Continuity in Space, and another work called Antigrazioso, a portrait of his mother, were ever made into permanent materials, crudely made. The one at MoMA has been a favorite of mine, the Metropolitan, et cetera, but they're really realized in an antique way with an antique material. And I, again, took Boccioni's endpoint as my beginning point and decided to make it. The joke is at the studio, the Ferrari of Boccioni's. And hopefully the cumulative effect of all those thousands of changes makes it a different work.
It looks like it's made of gold, is it?
The exterior is a heavy layer of gold. It is realized through 3D printing initially. And then there are many layers of metal, resin, stainless steel, etc. underneath that mirrored gold surface.
In an odd way, you're using the 3D printer to do what artists in the past would have their assistants do.
Yes.
I don't know about that. I think it's more interesting to sort of think about it in terms of just one more tool in the toolbox. You know, those of us that have grown up with digital media, it's kind of become second nature to a certain degree. So it's just not that dissimilar to, say, the pop artist using silkscreen.
Well, Richard, you also have a piece that looks metallic, your large-scale sculpture called Going Around by Passing Through. It's standing outside the museum, and it looks like a deflated balloon head. What's it made of?
It's cast aluminum, but originally it's based on a rubber, silicone rubber work that I made, a series of these pieces by brushing silicone rubber over a very large CNC enlargement of a life mask, and then peeling that rubber off, similar to the way one would peel rubber off of a glove mold. So you've seen those sort of ceramic white hands in antique shops. That's similar to the process. So I had this very process-oriented rubber work, and that didn't have a heck of a lot to do with digital fabrication. But the process of then scanning that and enlarging it to this very large public work outside of the museum had everything to do with digital processes.
My guests are Richard DuPont and Barry X. Ball, two of the artists represented in a show called Out of Hand, Materializing the Post-Digital. It is at the Museum of Arts and Design on Columbus Circle. And also with us is the show's curator, Ronald T. Lobacco. And Ron, we have been talking about sculptures, but the show also includes functional works like flatware, chairs, light fixtures, jewelry, shoes, clothing, and wall hangings and art pieces.
You forgot to mention the architecture and the conceptual works about 3D printed housing that has really incredible implications in terms of
a big dump truck that is made out of Gothic imagery.
Absolutely. A twisted dump truck that would only have been realized with the digital tools of today.
Now, you mentioned architecture. You have some of the most famous architects in the world represented here, and some pretty famous artists as well, but also people whose work I might not know much about. How did you find them?
After digging basically through the internet and just asking around. This, if you think about when this show was actually organized about 2.5 years ago, 3D printing, for example, was not part of the public's consciousness the way it is right now. And but, you know, as researching any exhibition, people come to the fore, and there was so much material from which to choose.
You mentioned architects. Well, you have Maya Lin, you have Daniel Libeskind, you have Zaha Hadid here. Are architects using this new technology instead of putting together little foam core models of what they plan to build?
They can, or they can start with the foam core models, scan them, and then manipulate them in the computer. What's also fascinating is that these technologies allow architects to create sculptural works and sculptors to create architectural works and designers to also explore fashion and other disciplines that they ordinarily wouldn't.
You have some other well-known artists like Chuck Close, tapestries, Frank Stella, who does three-dimensional pieces, and Anish Kapoor, who you would immediately assume would be interested in this kind of thing. Do you find that most of the sculptors today are at least curious about this way of working?
I think that's what's fascinating. And those sculptors and artists whom you've mentioned are really at the forefront of their field because they have such interest in different in media and in sort of pushing their own work forward.
Well, fairly inexpensive 3D printers are now commercially available. Do they see this as becoming a tool that, I'm asking all of you, do you see this as becoming a tool that many artists will just naturally gravitate toward in the future?
Well, I mean, I would say that, you know, certainly right now, 3D printing is limited by scale. Yeah, CNC milling, computer numerically controlled milling, which is the opposite of 3D printing. 3D printing being a process that builds objects cumulatively, and CNC milling being a process that carves objects out of a block of foam, say, are quite different. CNC milling has been around for a long time, and most sculptors use CNC milling to enlarge small maquettes up to large-scale forms now, as opposed to the traditional technique of pointing, and that's been going on for some time. I think what's different is you know, the way in which the imagination enters into it at this point. People are really sort of free associating with technology more than they used to be and coming up with really kind of more unconscious responses.
And the range is incredible, Ron. The show has some really unusual pieces like Object Breast Cancer Project Extractions. What's the story behind that piece?
Well, that's an art project by a pair of artists, Leonor Carballo and Abu Farman, and it's based on Leonor's being diagnosed with breast cancer. So using the imaging of the tumor, she created works of art that that I think cast a different light on breast cancer and raise a different type of dialogue.
It's both beautiful and rather freaky.
It is, and rather haunting at the same time.
The show covers three floors of the museum. On the second floor, you have computers and 3D printers, as well as examples of pieces fabricated in different materials. Can visitors try their hand at making something using the new technology?
They can. We have some stations where people can play with modeling, but people can also actively participate by being 3D scanned. I think it's fascinating that in 2001, Richard had to go to a Navy base to be scanned. Now, people can come to the museum and be scanned, and ultimately, they can receive a digital file and have a small figure of themselves, a miniature self-portrait printed out.
Barry, do you have your eye on any other classical sculptures that need to be perfected?
Not only have my eye on them, I've been actively scanning them. Examples would be Michelangelo's last work, the Pietà Rondanini, San Bartolomeo, and the Duomo in Milano. I just did an incredible group in Bologna, the Compianto su Cristo Morto of Nicola dell'Arca, so on. So,
and Richard, I'm assuming you have more figures in mind.
I do. I've been working on some new pieces that are female forms. I've also been working on a lot of these rubber, sort of hanging soft rubber forms that are kind of a combination of studio accident, and then using some of these newer technologies to fabricate larger versions.
There's also a fascinating catalog published by Black Dog Publishing that shows these processes. And my great thanks to Richard DuPont and Barry X. Ball, two of the artists who are featured in this show, Out of Hand, Materializing the Post-Digital. Also, the show's curator, Ronald T. Labacco. It runs to Columbus Circle until what?
Until June 1st.
Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you, Leonard.
Thank you.